Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is the relationship between the love of reading and the labor of writing? Marcus Zusak first felt the call of life as an author when he was a teenager. He secured his first book deal by 25 and since then has published 5 novels, including The Book Thief and I Am the Messenger, both of which have been honored with the American Library Association's Prince Award for Excellence in Young Adult Literature. He's in town to give the keynote address at the Highland Park Literary Festival tonight at 7 at Highland Park High School. Marcus, welcome to Think.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what sort of value was placed on reading and on literacy in the family that you grew up in?
Oh, it was really big because my parents couldn't speak English when they came to Australia. And so I think it was important for them that we be good readers and communicators. I'm the youngest of 4 kids. And so I never grew up in a house that didn't have books in it. You know, whereas I think especially my mom, she grew up in a house that had not a single book in it for a long time. And it was just something that was always around. And I used to walk around eating books, just the corners of Dr. Seuss books, I think.
Did you, as the child of immigrants, did you sort of interpret the culture in Australia for your parents? And did you feel like a go-between ever?
No, I think they became really Australian in the sense that they were there for quite a while before I was born. I mean, they came to Australia in the very late part of the 1950s and I was born in 1975. And because I was the youngest as well, I think my sisters who were the eldest in the line of our family, I think they were the more immigrant child specimens, let's say, in that they couldn't speak much English when they went to school, and that actually terrified my parents. So they started speaking more English at home. So my brother and I mean, I can speak German, but not as well as my sisters. And so it was what it was. And we were known as the immigrant family in the area where we grew up. And that was kind of okay as well. It was generally pretty fun. I mean, sometimes it got a bit nasty, but that's just how it is.
So your parents were from Germany and Austria, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they grew up as kids during World War II.
Yeah, and especially they were really young, especially my mum, when, you know, during the actual war period. And a lot of their stories were actually about after the war and growing up in that time where, you know, there wasn't much around. And we just heard those stories as if it was just the way stories get told. They never sat us down and said, now we're going to tell you something about life or anything like that. It was just, they would just tell these stories and we would sit and listen. And I was really lucky that both my parents were great storytellers. And that is such an unusual combination that, you know, often you'll meet someone with great stories and they're just unable to tell it. Whereas both my parents could tell these great stories in a way that had us captivated. And I think that's how I ended up loving writing, through hearing their stories and wanting to be a storyteller in a way.
What was it about the way they told stories? Did they sort of withhold those awesome sort of turning point details, or what drew you in?
I think they were able to give us great characters. I think that's what it was. And it's still my belief that it's great characters that make great books. And sure, of course, you've got to have the right elements of story as well. But, you know, it's like one of my favorite books is What's Eating Gilbert Grape by Peter Hedges. And it's probably, it's not so much the story, it's the characters. And so I think that's what it was, that both my parents grew up in these small towns outside of big cities. So my mum, Munich, and my dad, Vienna. And, you know, they just told these stories about the characters in their town, and we felt like we knew those people. And then it would get to elements of story where they had to go to bomb shelters and things like that, and then they'd mention who was there and what it was like. And, you know, whether it was my mum talking about her sister, where everyone took photo albums and things to the cellar, or, you know, the basement where they were hiding out, you know, but her sister always took her curlers and for her hair, you know, and everyone was like, look at her with her curlers, you know, and that's how my mum would tell the story. And so all of those things, they just get embedded and you hear it more than once, and that's the great thing, is that it was, for me, starting to write a book like The Book Thief, you feel at first like you've got almost like, where am I going to start? And it's like scratching something in your mind. And it's like, imagine waking up one day and realizing you can speak another language. That's what it was like. I realized I could just open that little hole in a way, reach in and pull out that world. And that's what I had. I had this whole world that I knew. And I started writing. And, of course, you know, it's not then. Oh, and then I had a book. of course, there were all the trials and tribulations of writing it. But the world was there and the language of that world was there. And that was all from sitting in our kitchen listening to them tell their stories. So I'm really grateful for that.
How did the way you talked to your parents and asked your parents about those stories change when it was sort of officially an idea for a book, that you were going to, you fictionalized their stories, we should say, and there's a lot that you added that is entirely your own. But were there different sorts of things that you wanted to tap into?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. It just started, at first I was just really scratching around and not quite sure. And I didn't even interview them at first. I thought I'll just start cold. And then I did talk to them a little bit with some questions. And it was really quite funny because on one hand they were really useful, and on other hand I felt like a handicap because, you know, I'd ask something and they'd go, oh, God, I don't know. You know, I don't know anything about that. And then 3 months later they would tell me something that was really the answer. I'd say, why couldn't, you know, I asked you that. And they said, oh, well, I couldn't remember at the time. And so in a way it was a real scattery approach to things as well, because, I mean, I had a really good example is I had the hardest time originally at the start of that book. This foster child, this girl shows up at the house and you know, it was just in my mum's story. It was about because her mother was really poor and her brother got separated and she got sent to this foster home. And I thought, oh, that's not really enough. I need there to be more of a reason than just being poor. For whatever reason, I just thought I need more than that. So I was really searching around, and then I hit on this great thing where I thought, oh, there was a whole problem with communism as well, and they hated the communists. And I thought, oh, what if her father or mother or parents in general were accused of being communists? And so I went through this whole research rigmarole, I suppose, of discovering that. And then I said to my mum later, oh, I came up with an idea that, you know, maybe the parents of the girl were communists. And she's gone, oh, yeah, I think that was probably how it was anyway. I'm like, yeah, thanks a lot. You could have told me that 6 months ago when I was going through all of this. So I think I'm really grateful for it in the end that it worked out. I think it still helped me get to know them better. And so it was a fun thing to talk to them about, which sounds really funny or strange because it's about such a terrible time. And it's not to say that they had these idyllic childhoods. Of course they didn't. And but it was just like hearing about another side of things. And you know, there were particular details that were really interesting. Like my dad refused to go. Like good Austrian boys had to go. Well, they all had to go to Hitler Youth. And he just went, I'm not going to that. It's bloody boring. You know, and that's exactly how he told the story. He's like, that's just going to be really dull. And so he went to the river and threw rocks into the river instead until the letters came threatening his parents and all that. And I started to weigh that up against all the propaganda reels you see of the kids who are all in line and, you know, and marching and doing all of that. Yeah. And I thought, and there you had my dad going, oh, that just looks silly, you know? And so I just thought, it wasn't like I set out to say, oh, here's another side to Nazi Germany or anything like that. It was just, they were the stories I knew and they were interesting to me. And so that was where I started off.
So, famously, the narrator in that book is death. And the first thing I wanted to ask you is whether you see death as a woman or a man.
I don't know. I know it's been an interesting thing in certain places where the book has come out. Like in Brazil, for example, death is female. And usually, like here and at home, male. And I don't know. I don't think about those things too much when I'm writing. I mean, it came through for me as a male voice all the time. just because of, you know, my own cultural bias, I suppose. But I more wanted it to feel like death was the missing piece of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he refers to the sky who was wide and blue and magnificent, or the trees who. I wanted death to be like, treat those things as if they were colleagues,
mm-hmm.
and as if we're all just part of the same thing. So I thought of it more in terms of that than I did in male and female.
What kind of, for this book or any of the others that you've written, what kind of experimentation does it take to sort of get the point of view right and the main character? Because you could have told many of this of the books that you've written, you could have told the story of a different character as sort of the central character.
Yeah, you make these decisions every day when you write, I suppose. But with The Book Thief is a really good example, because I started off with Death as the narrator, then I switched to Liesl, the main character, as the narrator, and then that wasn't working, and so I went to a third-person narrator, and it was like, oh, how am I ever going to... What's wrong? I mean, because there are always problems, and the problem I had with Death originally was that I wrote him too macabre,
mm-hmm.
and sadistic and sardonic. He was enjoying his work a lot, and he's sort of... He'd be going around saying, "All right, how many souls am I going to get today?" Or he'd say some really terrible things that were just a bit too creepy. I felt like I'd write a page and have to go and take a bath or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't quite right. And then the problem with Liesl narrating was that now she was starting to sound a little bit Australian.
You know?
and
could be forgiven for that.
Yeah. And so there was a bit of a problem there. And so third person, and I thought, this is what I was trying to avoid all mm-hmm. along. And then so I arrived back at Death. And the thing is, all of those failures, you're still collecting ideas while you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back to Death as narrator, because I thought, oh, what if Death was actually afraid of us, or in awe of us in terms of the terrible things we can do? And what if he's telling this story to prove to himself that humans can actually be worthwhile? And once I started narrating it like that, you know, narrating in that sort of way, it just felt right. And that's what you're always looking for, is you're looking for something that feels right and natural. And then that's when the book really started coming together. And I went back to the beginning, started again, and wrote through. And it took about another year from that point.
That relationship to failure is so interesting, because it's something that I think writers really understand, and everyone maybe feels it in a different way, but you can't start anything, right, without knowing that along the way it's going to get tougher and tougher.
Yeah, you know you're going to have a lot of bad days, and it's really interesting when you have friends who all work in trade jobs and things like that, and they're always... You know, the first thing they say to me, if they call me at midday, let's say, you know.
Oh, you're
say,
home, right? Yeah.
Yeah, right. Didn't wake you, did I? And, so when's Oprah? When's that start? That's kind of how, you know, they treat it. It's like I don't work at all. And mm-hmm. there's that perception. And there's often, I could often say to them, well, what time did you start work today? And I'm well aware that I was working before they were, and I know that I'm worrying about my work much more than they do. So that's the payoff: freedom and discipline and responsibility.
My guest is author Marcus Zusak. His novels include The Book Thief and I Am the Messenger. He's in town to give the keynote address at the Highland Park Literary Festival this evening at 7 at Highland Park High School. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is author Marcus Zusak. His books include The Book Thief and I Am the Messenger. He has other novels as well. He's in town to give the keynote address at the Highland Park Literary Festival this evening at 7 that takes place at Highland Park High School. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I'm curious, Marcus, for you, if the experience of writing really deeply emotional material is as draining for you as it is, you think, for your readers, or if there is there a certain amount of distance that you have to have, professional distance, to get through it?
Yeah, I think it's both. One of my favorite things is when someone comes up to me and says, "Oh, my God, thank you so much. I was crying the whole last part of your book,
yeah.
You know, so 50 or 60 pages." And I say, "Well, you think that's bad. You should have seen me when I was writing it." Mm-hmm. And because I was just a complete mess at the end of The Book Thief, because it was 3 years of work and it was all coming to an end. And it's a, you know, quite a tragic end in a lot of ways, but a hopeful end in others. And so you're torn between all of those emotions. And then you'll have someone say something like, "Oh, how could you let such and such a character die?" And my favorite character in The Book Thief is a character called Rudy, who's this mm-hmm. great little kid. And someone says, how could you do that? And I say, "Well, I have to tell you, Rudy was my favorite character, but not for one second did I think of not letting him die.
Hmm.
Not for one." And there is a part of you that's quite cold about that, because you do what's right for the book. You don't do what's right for one character in the book, or even for the reader, or even for yourself. It would have been great in a lot of ways for Rudy to jump up and say, "No, I'm actually alive." but it just couldn't work out that way. And mm-hmm. I think we love him more, that particular reader and I love him more for what happened to him. And I think that would have been diminished by allowing him to be okay.
So we were discussing before the show started, you've got two little kids. How do you turn off that kind of work experience that you've been engrossed in for hours and then, like, make peanut butter sandwiches or, I don't know, whatever it is that your kids need when you're engaged with them?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it just works hand in hand now. And my daughter's really funny. She's six, and she'll leave a note for me on the door that says, "Dinner is in 5 minutes," you know, and it's D-I-N-A uh-huh. for dinner. And I think I'm making light of it, but it is hard, especially mm-hmm. when you work at home. And I do work at home. I had an office for a little while, and I was always cleaning the office and letting people stay there, and it didn't work out. And so I just found one of the great things about having kids is that little element of chaos that comes into your life,
yeah.
Which isn't necessarily the best thing for your writing career.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just one of those things that you manage it the best you can. And I switch off pretty easily now. And I'm always thinking about the book, and sometimes I'm muttering to myself and my daughter might be, you know, the kids might be in the bath or something, and I'm sitting there muttering away, and my daughter will just go say to my son, she'll say, "Hey, Noah, he's talking to himself again." and it's just, it's kind of nice. And I kind of think, oh, that's the stories they're going to tell their kids one day, that the crazy old dad was muttering away in the bathroom again. So I think it's just part of life now, and who knows what stories will turn up in the end.
We had an author on a couple of weeks ago, and I was really interested. He wrote, he writes short fiction, and he said when he's stuck on a project, he will turn and write something else, which struck me as a really interesting way to get away. And I wonder if for you there are tricks you have, just if you need to push past something that is a problem for you in your writing.
Yeah, I'm probably the last person to ask advice on that, because I know other authors will do something like that. Like a good friend of mine, he writes book after book after book, and then he says, "Oh, gosh, I need a break, and I'm just going to write a short story." I'm like, "Are you crazy?" You know, which I just can't do, because for me, the one book I'm writing is all-consuming,
mm-hmm.
and I don't even want to think about another book. I think earlier on in my career, I would write 40 pages of a book, and then when it stopped working, I'd start the other book that I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. But now I'm working on one book, and the book just really means everything to me. And so I just can't switch off and then start writing something else without it feeling meaningless. And it's been a real problem. I think I have to get better at that, because I've been so ingrained in this book that sometimes you can't even see anything beyond it. And all you see is what's wrong with it too. So it's probably not the most, it's not the wisest way to go about things. So I should get that guy's number and get some advice from him.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Scott in Carrollton. Hi, Scott.
Well, hello, Chris. I just wanted to thank you for your show. It's always wonderful.
Well, thank you.
And I wanted to thank the author. I blanked out on his first name, but I just wanted to say that, and I'm not sure, I'm an old guy, I'm 60, and I think I found The Book Thief in the young adult or children's section, which struck me as odd after I read it, but I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's wonderful.
Well, thank you for your call. And Scott, it's Marcus. Marcus Zuzak.
And I did have one question I just wanted to ask. It sounds like that he obviously struggled with the book. And I just, what was it that kept driving him in the face of just kind of just rejection and kind of failure that he went through as he rewrote and everything that kept him going to keep writing?
Well, I think thank you very much, by the way. That was really nice. And I don't know what it is. It's my job is one thing. That's one side of it. But I'm just driven to write the story that I have to write. And that's it. And that's just, it's something that I have to do. It's something that I want to do. And I don't want to be anything else. And so it's like, this is the one thing I've got to try to get right. And so I can't foresee myself doing any other job, and that's why finishing that book, I mean, that one especially, because it was based on stories that my parents had told me, I think there was that extra motivation. And they were constantly, it was like a reverse conversation between parents and their kids. It was constantly, so when's the book going to be finished? When's the book going to be finished? And, you know, it was a bit like kids asking for an ice cream, and we had to ban it from discussion and till finally it was done. So I think that's what drove me on for The Book Thief as well. But also I grew to really love the characters in that book. And it's the first time I used to think it was a bit hokey when people would say, you know, oh, I dream about the characters in my books, and I miss them afterwards. And to me, I won't lie and say that I missed the characters. I mean, I think I did in a way, but not in a way that I was consciously going around saying, "Geez, I really miss Liesl and Rudy and some of the other people." But I had a great affection for the characters, and I wanted to do them justice and finish the book. So that's probably the best way I can answer that one.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. So I'm not sure, honestly, Marcus, that this has ever happened. We have multiple emails, multiple calls. Everyone is curious about the young adult genre and how you feel in that. And maybe it's different. Maybe the way we think about young adult fiction in this country is different than it's categorized in the rest of the world. Mm. To you, does it feel like somehow lesser than writing for adults?
No, the way I feel about it is, well, first of all, I should say that it is different here than it is in other countries. In Australia, it's almost a death knell for a book to be a young adult book.
Hmm.
It is still seen, and it's one of those things where someone says, oh, I've got a book coming out, and someone says, oh, what sort of book is it? And they say, oh, it's just a young adult. And I say, well, you can take the just out of that.
Hmm.
If it's a young adult book, be proud of that. It's a really interesting one for me, because The Book Thief has come out as a young adult book in some places, and a book for adults in the majority of places.
Like literary fiction as opposed to...
Yeah, and some as... It's come out as both. Like in England, it came out... There were two different... I mean, it's the same book, but two different covers, one for adults, one for kids. And the way I think of it is this, like from a personal point of view, I really don't care. And that sounds a bit dismissive. Let me say I really don't mind where it goes, because my goal is not to write a good young adult book. My goal is to write someone's favourite book. And I know that's a lofty sort of goal, but I feel like, okay, you fall short of that. There are a lot of great books in the world. It's no disgrace. And I think of my favorite books that I put on my top shelf, and that's the sort of book I'm aiming to write. You want to write I think a book that is loved transcends whatever category it's in. And so for me, I don't really mind so much. It certainly hasn't hurt the book here, but I have to say, I think 80 to 90% of the Book Thief's readers are adults, even in America where it came out as a young adult book. So I think you just hope that your book finds its readers. And in my case, The Book Thief most definitely has. But, you know, some of my favourite books are young adult books. Some of my favourite books are books that would have been young adult books if they were published now. I mean, there's a strong argument that To Kill a Mockingbird would have been a young adult book. And I don't know how people feel about that, but it gets said a lot. I mean, and there's one of the great books in Australia, which is called My Brilliant Career. It would most certainly have been a young adult book if it was released now. So I think the lines are pretty murky, and I would say certainly don't shy away from a book because it is a young adult book. And that's the interesting thing too. Sorry, I'm going on a bit now.
No, it's fine.
But I think a lot of adults will read books for adults and they'll read books for children. But the young adult, so they don't know what to do with that. It's almost somehow, so they think it's somehow beneath them or something like that. And it's like, why would I read that? And it's like, well, it doesn't matter. If it's good, it's good. And that's the end of the story.
So your books have been translated into more than 30 languages. You mentioned that you speak German. Obviously, you speak English. How much of a say do you have in choosing the translator into another language? And what if you could tell them, you know, one thing about the voice you want them to convey? What would that be?
Yeah, the translators have been quite funny. Some of them I've met a few of them. Post, you know, the book coming out, and some of them have really said, "I hated you when I was translating this book because Death doesn't speak English exactly the way we do."
Right.
And that whole thing of like the sky who was wide and blue and magnificent and things like that. They would go, "What do I do with that?" And so I honestly very, very rarely get to speak to the translator, and some publishers really, you know, wait to get the very best translator, and then others don't. So often I'll get people come up to me and say, "Oh, that was a really good translation," or "It wasn't a very good translation." And, you know, you just really hope for the best. I mean, I'm never going to tell how it's turned out. So you're really in their hands then.
Can you really tell a difference in the way that the books are received when you hear from people, you know, in China or Japan or South America? Do they pick up on different things based on their culture?
That's really interesting. I think it's more you pick up on differences within a certain culture. For example, I went to Brazil and it was just it's the most amazing place I've ever been, and people who come to book signings there are just there are some great stories in that, but every lady you meet, you know, it's like a kiss on both cheeks, and get the book signed and a photo, and then every mess shake hands, and it's really warm and everything. And I'd get kids come up to me in Rio in the bookstores, and these kids were great, and you know, they'd come up and they'd say to me, "Oh, could you sign this? And by the way, I don't have any money. I'm stealing this book." and I'd be signing it, and I'd say, "Oh, there you go. Oh, good luck." you know, you're just waiting for the alarm to go off as they leave the bookshop, but it never did. And, you know, I was really relieved about that. So it's not so much that they pick up on certain things, but you wonder, like, for example, in South America, where there'll be more of the magical realism idea that they pick up on, but not really. I think one of the universal thing is that, again, that idea of characters, and everyone always just talks to me about the characters, and so, you know, that's about as far as any differences go. It's more meeting the people that's different.
Do you think of I Am the Messenger as a work of magical realism, or do you think that the mysterious driver of the good works performed by your protagonist is just a person?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or do you not want to comment on that?
Oh, no, I'll comment. I'm not very... I've always believed that... It's even... Like, when I'll always talk about what I'm writing or what I'm working on. I don't believe in that, oh, you've got to protect it. And I'm not really a believer in that. So The Messenger, I Am the Messenger, is one of those books that I think I was really learning on. And I was stepping up from much shorter books to a more plot-driven sort of story. And so I was really finding my way. And even the ending, I sort of feel like I didn't quite get right. And I was taking a risk. And that's really what led me to write The Book Thief. And so I guess in a way there's that idea of metafiction or whatever at the end. And even I say that and I'm not even sure what it means. I think as writers, we often pretend to be very serious and intelligent. And half the time we don't know exactly what we're doing. We're finding a way to make the book work. And so there was that idea of who's behind Ed's mission. And, you know, it turns out, you know, you find out who that is at the end if you get it, and some people get it, some people don't. And so it's a bit messy, the end of that book, to me. But I don't regret doing it, because it taught me that the only way you'll get anywhere or break new ground is to take a few risks. And like I said, that's what led me to write The Book Thief. So I don't know if it's magical realism. I think it's just a cab driver driving around hoping for a few answers.
My guest is author Marcus Zusak. His novels include The Book Thief, I Am the Messenger, and others. He's in town to give the keynote address tonight at the Highland Park Literary Festival. That starts at 7 at Highland Park High School. There will be a book signing event just before that. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Marcus Zusak, author of The Book Thief, I Am the Messenger, and other novels. He will give the keynote address at the Highland Park Literary Festival tonight at 7 at Highland Park High School. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. Email address is think@kera.org. I realize you're not an educator, but I'm curious if you have an opinion about the best and worst things we do to try to encourage young people to read and particularly to write.
Oh, that's a tough one. All I remember is when I was teaching in certain ways, I think it takes a long time to figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking that to teach creative writing, no one really has any clue. And so they'll give you I used to give kids a first sentence and say, all right, off you go. And that's not teaching them anything, until I started to realize, all right, what do I do? And you can't teach them exactly what you do, because it's a bit too abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And,
that's your process.
Yeah, and it's also, you need to have clearly defined sort of mechanisms, I suppose. And so I think what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong, I honestly don't know. Mm-hmm. I do know that you ask anyone who's creative and they'll talk about standardized tests, and maybe there's probably not enough reading for fun and that sort of thing. So that's probably the direction I'd love to see things go in, more where there aren't so many standardized tests and people can just write for the fun of it as well. But, you know, I think there are certain realities as well. But I probably can't comment too much on that. Maybe as my kids get older, I'll be a bit more able to have a bit more of an attitude or some chagrin about how things are done.
Well, did you, from the time you decided you wanted to write, did you have the discipline to be really persistent and stick with it for hours on end, or was that something that you had to sort of consciously cultivate in yourself?
I think early on I struggled, because what most people have a problem with when they start writing a book is that they think it's going to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
And yep, I was no different when I was 16, and I thought, oh, I can just write this the way these great authors have done. Yeah, I should be able to do that. And then you write 8 pages and it's terrible and you got nowhere else to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you lose it, and then you go, all right, okay, what do I have to do? I have to structure this from, I have to say chapter one, this will happen, 2, 3, 4. And you go through, and then there was a time starting out where then the fire's burning really brightly, and you can't, like, I used to be able to work, you know, 10, 12 hours a day writing, and it was all gold. Like, it was all great. You know, I thought, this is who would not publish this? And I look back now, and of course, this is not very good at all. And so I think it actually gets a little bit harder as the years go by. And when you know more, you doubt yourself more.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it harder to get to the desk. The hardest thing is always getting to your desk.
Mm-hmm.
And being ready and switched on, because of course it's the easiest job in the world not to do. So it's, so
that would make a great bumper sticker.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't thought of that. So I think it is one of those things that if it does keep calling you back after the failures and everything else, that's the question, is if it keeps calling you back, well then you're a writer.
You're still so young in a profession that people continue sometimes up into their, you know, very advanced years. What kind of goals do you have for yourself, and how do you know that you're still growing, and is there room for you to really, you know, sort of colossally fail once and still pick up and do more novels after that?
Yeah, I'm struggling with that at the moment, and it's a really difficult thing. And the book I'm writing at the moment, which is about a boy building a bridge, and I always thought this was going to be the book, mm-hmm. that was going to be the big book, that was my best chance. And I'd even written it once before, but I realized I wasn't ready to write it yet, which was a big realization. You know, I was probably 21, 22 at the time. And so I'd always been heading towards this book, and then The Book Thief came along, and it became that book,
mm-hmm.
that did everything. And now I'm in this area where I've been working on this book for 6 years now, and I've made the grave mistake of being too meticulous with it too quickly. So it took me so long to write the first page.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're working so hard on the first page, then it becomes a security blanket in a way before you start the second page and then the next chapter. And so I've been struggling a lot with the idea of, oh, what if you haven't got it anymore? What if The Book Thief was it? What if that was? And people say, just put this book aside and write your next book. And I say, I haven't got a next book.
Mm-hmm.
It's this book or nothing. And I know I've got other books in me, but they're not ready yet. They're not ready for me to start. So you're faced with these sort of doubts every single day of, okay, is this the book that's going to fail? Is this the one that's going to be really hard? And so far, it had, like, this is the book that's nearly broken me. And yet, I'll be back home in a few days, and I'll be working on it. So I think it's one of those things. You have the choice always to walk away, but you don't. And
because you can't?
Well, what else? There is that question of what else am I going to do? But it's not even that. It's not even, I've got no other job. It's not even that. I could probably not work for a little while. I could probably afford to at the moment and just relax, but I don't want to. It's what I am. It's what I have to do.
I mean, I have to tell you, I think that candor is really astonishing, and it's something that you don't often hear from people. But I think it's so honest, and I would imagine any other artist listening, any other writer certainly, could relate exactly to what you just said. And the thing about writing is that it's this balance between talent and the sort of gift of being able to conceive a story and then the hard work that it takes to translate what's in your brain to something that makes sense to other people and means something to other people.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes it so difficult as well. It's such a beautiful thing that it's hard to grasp. And I really appreciate you saying that, because I remember once at home in Sydney, I was on a radio program, and it was this great, and I love the show and I love everything about it. And I'd been on with this guy before, and then he had several panelists, and it was a whole show about creativity. And I was in what you would call, you know, in that, I kind of love it when people say I was in a really dark place then, you know, I was in a pretty dark place, you know, with the book, and everyone else was like, yeah, creativity is great. And I was like this storm cloud sitting in the middle of the thing. And afterwards I just, oh, so sorry. And then actually one of the other people who came on the show later, and I can't remember what field he was in. He wasn't a writer. He may have been an architect or something like that, and he actually said, oh, that writer you had on, and he talked about just that you know, how important self-belief is and how hard it is sometimes to have the will to go on because you're lacking that self-belief in that moment. He said, oh, I really appreciated that. So I think we all understand it in different ways, and I think artists more so than most people, but I think mm-hmm. we all have fears about our capabilities. But it's not all of us who sit down and we're with it alone for long, long stretches
yeah.
of time.
We don't. And many people don't choose to have careers that require that.
Yeah, and I can't go to the water cooler and chat to, you know, Bill and Stephanie about, you know, what happened on American Idol last night, because there is no water cooler and there are no colleagues at that point. I mean, I have friends, but they're also writers who are solitary going about their own work. And it's one of the attractions. I like being alone mm-hmm. and I love writing and I love the control of it. So it's a balance, and the payoffs are beautiful. And when you finish a book, and even those moments, even in the darkest periods, you write a sentence. I mean, the book I'm writing now, there's this part where all these boys show up somewhere, and just a sentence will save you that day. And mm-hmm. you say, and in this case, these boys show up, and just the sentence that you didn't know you were going to write that day. And the sentence is just, oh, and you could sense their odor to the smell of never quiet men. Mm. And in that sense, like, that whole page could just be no good, but I like that sentence, yeah. that little gem on the page, and you go, all right, that was worth coming to the desk for.
Yeah,
and
today,
that's what
today worked,
for.
Finally.
Yeah, that's right.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go back to the phones now and speak with Alice in Dallas. Hi, Alice.
Hi. First of all, I would just like to say thank you to Mr. Zuzak for such a great work. I truly, truly love this book. I have bought several over the years and given them as gifts to my families and friends. I keep the Book Thief out, like on bedside tables, so people will pick it up and they'll get interested in it. And I'm just curious, because so many people are on e-readers now, myself included, I'm not able to purchase because of the industry. You're not able to purchase books online to give to others, and I find that so frustrating. And I'm just wondering, sir, how you feel about that, and if you have any knowledge and insight to how the book publishing industry might be trying to change that, so I can give more of your books through Amazon or through iBooks. What do you think about that? And thank you again for this lovely, lovely book.
Thanks for your call, Alice.
Oh, thank you very much, and thanks for giving the book to so many people. It's funny, I do that with my favorite books as well, so I have to buy them in hardcover so that I'm less likely to give it away. And, so that's so nice. As to the question about e-readers and all of that kind of thing, I honestly don't know the solution to any of those problems. It's, to me, it's really nice when you see someone reading an actual book at a bus stop, mm-hmm. and it's easy to think, you know, people are looking at their phones and all that sort of thing, that they could be reading a book on their phone. And I know
very much the benefit of the doubt, but yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or you got more of a chance if it's an iPad obviously if it's a Kindle or something like that. And I mean, I prefer to look at all of those things as an opportunity as well. And I think the book industry has, I think, from what I've seen, has coped really well with that advance in technology and everything else. I mean, I have a few of the e-readers that I've just kind of ended up with, and they're not my preferred way of reading, but I get a little bit excited about reading a book in a different way. But as for gifts and giving them in that sort of way, I honestly have absolutely no idea. But I'm with you. It'd be great for that to happen somehow. You may have a new business opportunity on your hands there. I don't know.
I think just from personal experience, you can give an ebook on Amazon, but you have to know the person has the whatever technology to receive the book.
So it gets a bit messy.
Do you are you a trader of books that you love with your friends, and how do you manage the, you know, when you give someone a book that you love, you also sort of saddle them with an obligation to read something whether it works for them or not?
I'm more on the other side, where people will give me a book that they love and then I don't read it for 5 years.
Yeah.
But apparently that's a very male thing to do. Mm-hmm. And then I read it and I finally see the greatness in the book and why that person loved it. But from my point of view, if I lend someone a book, I gave them the book. I expect to never see it again. And that's mainly because of growing up with my brother. Because it was always my mum's thing. It's just like, if you lend Rob money, you just gave him money. And so I feel the same way about books. And I feel like that's a great, and I'll just go and buy that book again, because it will often be one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I think there's nothing more exciting than having read and loved something and then giving it to someone else, because the amount of time between now and when I might get back to it could be years, and you can always find another copy.
Yeah, that's right. And there's also a sense of trepidation, because you're almost willing them to love it as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like watching a movie with someone and you've told them how great the movie is, and you get this sense that they're not really enjoying it.
Yeah,
and then you're like, why can't you see how great this is? And so it's probably the same with books, but it's always, always worth the risk.
What do you read when you're on the plane from Australia to Dallas?
I had a copy of The Old Man and the Sea, mm-hmm. and I also had I really needed to do some work on the plane as well, and so I had my notebook with me as well. Everything's far, obviously, from Australia, and so everyone says, geez, you must watch a lot of movies, and it's only been recently that I've started watching movies on flights as well. I would always read, because I, you know, with two little kids, you can miss out on your reading time, so
yeah.
I take that opportunity when I go away.
Marcus Zusak is the Prince Award-winning author of The Book Thief, I Am the Messenger, and several other novels. He will give the keynote address at the Highland Park Literary Festival tonight at 7 at Highland Park High School. Marcus, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is our senior producer. You can download the podcast and learn more about the show at kera.org/think. And we always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.